And we have the pleasure of the newly elected ELCA bishop being with us this morning, Scott Johnson. Welcome.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. As it's been kind of a whirlwind, I know, for you. And I think for the ELCA, for this, the way this all happened. So let's kind of rewind to when the convention was held this summer.
Sure.
And kind of go through that process.
Yeah, well, my predecessor actually, he ended his term a couple years early. It was, he had an opportunity to take a position with Emmanuel as vice president for mission and spiritual life. Is former Bishop Moss's new title there. And so they announced late last year that there was going to be an election, and it was a couple months of just some conversations. There was a nominating process in February where my name was one of a couple that went forward from the Fremont area, and then we had some interviews. Did a video that was sent around the Senate. I think there were nine of us that agreed to let our names go forward in consideration. And then the first weekend in June was the actual assembly, where there was a process of five ballots over time that just kind of narrowed the list as we went. And the farther along we went, the more conversation we had. So. Very interesting process. Yeah.
I mean, you actually stand before the convention or the folks that'll be voting, and there were some times there where you could actually address everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so from what I saw of the address that you did, pretty darn good.
Well, thank you. My stance, and I think it was probably the same for all of us that were involved in the process, was the idea is just to be as honest as possible and say, you know, this is the way I see the work that we're called to as a church, and let the assembly make its own decisions on what they think is the point that we need to go, or the person that's got the particular set of gifts and skills that are needed in this moment. So, you know, and especially the last three candidates, all three of us, I think, I know the other two for certain, I would have been very happy had either of them been elected, because I trust their gifts and their skills and their judgment. And the assembly just decided, you know, that I was the one, I guess. But that's no, the two of them have been two of my strongest supporters since then.
Sure,
so
sure, yeah.
It's been good to have that that respect among colleagues as well.
Give us a little bit of your background and where you came from and how this all started and how God started working in your life.
Yeah, well, I'm a farmer's kid from Wakefield, Nebraska, is where I grew up, and not a lot of ministry in my immediate family. I have some distant cousins that are a couple generations separated that became pastors, but we're farmers, but we're also music people, and that was actually my plan going into college. I had hopes of being either a professional musician or a music educator, and just through some experiences at Carol Joy Holling Camp in Ashland, Nebraska, and then after that, Lutheran Campus Ministry in Lincoln, really started to have a sense that maybe I was being called into the ministry instead. Graduated from Lincoln. I actually switched my degree to study of the classics, which is basically Greek and Roman history, literature, religion, philosophy, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was a great pre-seminary degree. Unfortunately, doesn't really give me a lot of marketable job skills in 21st century America, other than going back to school. But I did my Master of Divinity at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I've served congregations in Minnesota and Iowa over the years, and also a campus ministry at Iowa State before being called to Midland in 2019.
Yeah. Being at Midland, we were able to, at our church, just north of town at Salem of Fontenelle, able to have you come in and substitute at times. And I know at that time we'd always say, oh, wow, that was pretty good. Who is that guy? And I think a lot of folks had that feeling at the convention this past summer. Wow, what that guy's, the things he's saying, I kind of like that.
Like I said, I try to tell the truth, but with as much kindness as possible too. I think that's one of the themes that I really have picked up on the last probably, I mean, even 9 or 10 years in America in particular, but certainly throughout the Midwest, is I think there is a definite need for us to practice more kindness with one another, mm-hmm. to learn. And that doesn't mean that we're always going to agree or that everyone walks in lockstep, but that the practice of doing our best to listen to one another and understand one another, so that even when we do disagree, we can do it with respect and we can do it honestly, but also say, you know, there is far more that unites us than divides us. So one of the things that I talked about when I was nominated was, I really think the church could benefit from learning how to be uncomfortable together, as opposed to the minute something goes differently than the way that I think it should, I'm out of here. You know,
right.
that's a practice that hasn't really done us a lot of good. And I think that's my experience growing up in Nebraska, was that we tend to be a pretty practical people, we haven't, at least in my experienced history, been too far to the extreme on either side. We tend to be, let's just get the thing done. And if that means that we do it differently, that's fine. That's who we are. And yeah, that's the way that I'd like to, you know, to hold the office as well.
So what happens now? I know it's been a while. You're able to set your, I guess, the people that you're going to be in your office.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine you have some sort of an agenda, not agenda, but some sort of goals that maybe go through some of what your number sure. one priorities are.
Sure. Well, there's a really steep learning curve with this position. Especially I in my career have not managed a church staff larger than four. Mm-hmm. So going from that to a synod office where we have approximately 10 full-time positions that I'm officially, you know, in charge of is a very steep learning curve for me, plus all of the stuff that goes with managing a synod that stretches from it's the entire state of Nebraska. It's 233 congregations, you know, several hundred thousand people. It's a big group of folks to be pastor to. And that's really the image, is that the bishop is the pastor to the entire synod. So I am a pastor to the pastors, but I'm also a pastor to all of the congregations.
Mm-hmm.
So my task so far has been a lot of listening, and it's a 6-year term, at which time, if I feel like I could serve again, I could put my name forward for re-election. There will be another election, though. It's not a rollover or anything like that. So there will be another election in 2028. You know, and I could discern that, you know, my 6 years were my 6 years and it's time for somebody else to lead. We'll just have to see how that goes. But for now, one of my colleagues, actually the bishop of the South Dakota Synod, I think had a really good plan. She said year one was listening, and then it's year five, or year two through six. So the 1 year of listening, 5 years of working towards something. So right now, I'm listening, I'm learning, I'm doing my best to understand how the work goes. We do have some staff turnover that's happened, and we'll have to figure out some staffing as well. I've got a couple positions to fill, both on the ministry side of our staff, but also on the administrative side. So all of that involves learning, and so it's a lot of listening, and then a lot of visiting too. I put almost 1,000 miles on the synod car just Friday, Saturday, and yesterday. So
it
just adds up really quick.
Yeah. And you have a family that goes with that.
I do.
And located right here in Fremont.
Yeah, my wife Kristen is a deacon, which in our church is considered a minister of word and service. So she is ordained, but she's not a pastor. She currently works at First Lutheran here in Fremont. She's the deacon for faith formation, primarily works with middle school, high school, and young adults. And she's going to continue in that position, and we are going to stay in Fremont. I have two daughters. Ainsley is a sophomore at Fremont High, and Alana is an eighth grader at Fremont Middle School. And that was their one condition when I was nominated. We did have a conversation as a family, and I asked, "Are you okay if I let my name go forward with this?" And they said, "As long as we don't have to move, we really don't care what you do."
Oh, so good, yeah.
That's in most cases. We don't really care what you do, Mom.
Yeah.
We just stay here.
You know, and we had moved to Fremont just before COVID hit, and mm-hmm. it was just you know, getting acclimated as a, you know, they were 13 and 12 at the time, that's hard enough. Doing it in the middle of a pandemic is just much harder. And you know, they had been in our previous calls for almost 8 years, so this is the only place that they had really known. They hadn't had to make new friends all that often, so we've liked living in Fremont. The commute's only about 40 minutes for me, and half the time I'm not even in the office anyway, because I'm out and around doing stuff. So it's a good spot for us to be.
Bishop Scott Johnson of the ELCA with us this morning. So far, I know you've been visiting. Has there been a common theme or something that keeps popping up where you're like, oh, that again?
We're currently we're in a clergy shortage, frankly. The ELCA has been by and large a rural church. It was started by rural immigrants, especially here in the Midwest. You know, a lot of folks who moved to America from Sweden, Norway, Germany, because there was land here and they could farm. And so as the agricultural world in the U.S. has changed, so has the environment that a lot of these churches were planted in. So, you know, communities that were 1,000 people 70 years ago and half of them were involved in agriculture, you know, might be 800 today, but only 5% of them are involved in agriculture or possibly even smaller. And that just means that it's harder and harder for some of our small community churches to support full-time pastors.
Yeah.
Couple that with the demographics of religion in America right now, the largest and fastest growing segment of the population, particularly among young adults, is the group that we call the nuns, the people that are not affiliated with any particular faith, but kind of practice, they call it spiritual, but not religious sometimes. You know, it's you know, denominational loyalty is just a thing of the past.
Right.
So put all of that together, and it looks like, as far as we can tell from statistics, the ELCA, like a lot of Protestant denominations, is short on clergy. We estimate we're about 1,000 pastors short across the entire church. Here in the Nebraska Synod, that means that a fairly high percentage of our congregations are in transition, and it is difficult sometimes to find ministers and to figure out the most faithful way to do ministry in places where a full-time pastor is just not a possibility. So there's a couple ways you can figure that. You know, you kind of look at the way that communities have gone with consolidated schools.
Right.
We'll have to practice probably some of that in our churches as well. You know, a community that could support a church 50 years ago, maybe they're part of a larger congregation that has several sites that a pastor rotates around, or we have a group of folks in our church called parish ministry associates that are licensed lay ministers that can do many of the things that a pastor does, but they haven't had the same level of training. They also don't have the same level of educational debt. So,
which is
something we've had to work on too. So it's a lot of moving pieces and just trying to figure out what's the faithful way to do ministry in Nebraska in 2022, because we've tried to pretend that it's 1972 for the last 50 years, and that really hasn't gotten us anywhere.
Yeah, technology, there's so many different ways you can do that. And other denominations are, I think, experiencing the same thing.
Absolutely.
Where they've had to cluster or put things together to make it happen for those smaller parishes.
Yeah. And to be clear, you know, we're not abandoning smaller parishes or walking away, but we also have to be honest. You know, if a congregation's averaging between 10 and 15 people on a Sunday, you know, can you really afford even a halftime minister with that level of participation? You know, we have to meet the resources to the need of the congregation and find ways to work in partnership. So that's one of the people that I've asked to come on my staff actually has experience in a congregation that was a joint Presbyterian Lutheran congregation, and her specialty is going to be helping us create parishes that bridge areas and full communion partnerships, and hopefully can help us do ministry a little more effectively together.
Yeah, very good. I wish we had more time. I've got other guests coming in this morning. We'll have to have you in again.
I know.
Well, the problem is you get a pastor talking, and you can't get him to stop. So,
well, let's see. We're at, I don't know, how long is your sermon supposed to be? You're at about 12 minutes now.
Probably too long.
Bishop Johnson, thank you for coming in. We'll have you in again.
Yeah,
for sure.
Great. Yeah.
For sure.
Every second Tuesday.
Yeah, every second Tuesday. Yeah.
Something like that. That'd be okay.
That'd be awesome.
Be all right.
Yeah. And that's another thing. I mean, embracing technology to be able to spread the word statewide.
Yeah.
That makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Not that the other bishops didn't, but to increase that probably would be a good idea.
Yeah. And my predecessor said that very thing. He said, we adapted to meet the need during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. There is no reason once the pandemic has died down that we have to go back to the old way of doing things. We should continue with the new practices that we've picked up. And I think that was absolutely the right way to take it.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good to be with you. Yeah.